This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, you rascally rascal, you. How you doing?
Doing real well, thanks. Excellent. Got your tax stuff all done? You all?
Oh, yeah. Sent in the check 2 days ago. We finally got enough saved up, and we have not had to pay extra for a number of years, like over a decade.
It's always the right amount. Yeah. Always a nervous time for me. I'm thinking, okay, what's it going to do to
exactly.
me this time?
So,
you know, if that guy in the White House could figure out a way to level this out and take all of this mess of tax season out of our lives, he'd be my hero forever.
Yeah, it would be nice. I understand that's one of the things they're going to be looking at, is redoing the tax system.
Well, so, I'm sure it won't be sufficient for most of us.
That's true.
But anyway, we'll get through it somehow. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Good to talk to you. We'll see you in about 20 minutes.
We'll get an update from you then. Thanks, Roger. Right. Roger Battish in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong with you again this morning. The Big O continuing to recuperate there in the Valley of the Sun, which is where he likes. He's always loved recuperating out there every year. And he just celebrated the birthday, of course, a week ago yesterday. And, we went to Lawns, he said, and enjoyed dinner there. And, he enjoys his favorite dining places. I mean, you name a city in America, and he'll say, well, you know, I was at Commander's Palace. And he always remembers those great dining establishments. And I do, too, as I've accompanied him along the way different times. FFA, that's something we both talk about often because it's such a great youth leadership development organization. Oh, yeah, it still has its roots in agriculture, has a lot to do with agriculture, but there's far more to it these days. We'll talk with an FFA advisor at a high school in Northern Illinois coming up on the broadcast here in just a few minutes on WGN Radio. We've talked in recent weeks about National Agriculture Day. Actually, that event took place in the month of March. Now, there's an Ag Day in Rochelle coming up in just a couple of weeks. And while it's not affiliated with the National Ag Day, the goals, it seems, from what I've been able to learn, are very similar to help educate and inform about the agriculture industry. The FFA advisor at Rochelle Township High School, Rochelle, Illinois, is Donna Page, who joins us to talk about Ag Day, which is coming up in Rochelle on the 21st. Good morning, Donna.
Oh, how are you, Max?
Give us some of the background here. First of all, on the high school's agriculture involvement, and tell us something about the chapter. You've been there for a while working with students, I understand.
Yes, this is my 12th year here at Rochelle, and it's been a very, very interesting journey here. Not only have we had a lot of success in the classroom, we've had a lot of success out of the classroom. For example, this year, our food science and technology CDE team won the state contest, so they will be representing Illinois and Rochelle at the national convention in October. And, you know, just seeing a lot of kids grow and develop into wonderful agricultural leaders has been a pretty phenomenal experience.
I would imagine you get to know the students very well. You know their capabilities. They're there with you for a few years. It must be very gratifying to see that by their senior year, they've been able to accomplish much already and are very prepared to go on to college.
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes I feel like I'm their parent as well as their advisor to watch them come in as awkward, timid freshmen and walk out of my door as, you know, the chapter president who can speak in front of large groups of people and represent himself at the State Proficiency Awards this year. You know, it's great to watch them grow and develop as leaders and as people and to know that I helped play a hand in their development while they were here at Rochelle.
You've hit on something that I'm often reminded is such an important part of FFA. Not only is there the knowledge gained of working with livestock or working with crops or working with foods and the science behind the foods, but it's the confidence, the leadership skills, the ability to speak, and that is just huge, it seems to me, Donna.
Absolutely. These students, and students in general, it's extremely important for them to prepare for life, what I call outside of these walls. those moments where they might have to speak in front of a wedding and present a toast, or meeting someone for their future job and shaking hands and being confident that they can represent themselves extremely well and be successful in whatever avenue they choose is a very important part of, for me, being an ag teacher and being an FFA advisor.
I don't mean to cast aspersions on those who are not in FFA, but the thing that I have seen so often is how the FFA member truly stands out of the crowd. They are remarkable. The way they step forward, they shake your hand, and you don't always see that from those who aren't involved in FFA.
Absolutely. It seems like those students just kind of have an innate ability after being in FFA for a few years to be the first one to extend a handshake and to not be timid when asked questions or when prompted or even to start that conversation. I've had several students who they start those conversations automatically because they've learned and they've gained the skills to know how to carry on a conversation at a dinner table and how to engage people who might not know anything about agriculture.
You know, you make an interesting point. I've been so surprised so many times when the student, that FFA student, will initiate the conversation, will come up to me and say, Mr. Armstrong, how's your farm all? Or how's Mr. Samuelson? And I'm always taken aback because I'm not expecting it from a high school student.
It's 100% true. You know, I see approximately 130 students a day. And while they're all active in my ag classes and they all participate, you can truly see the ones that have taken advantage of the FFA opportunity. And you can tell which ones have gained those skills that are going to make them successful in, you know, whether it's the public eye or a job interview or, you know, just in life in general. It's a pretty amazing opportunity.
I know that your classroom experience there and your working with them at the school contributes mightily, but to what degree does that trip to the state convention of the FFA or that trip to the national convention or involvement in district activities with students from other schools contribute to that development of leadership?
Oh, it's amazing to watch them interact with their peers and to see the looks on their faces the first time they go to that convention or the first time they go to that conference or the first time they come back from Washington Leadership Conference with, you know, a phone full of friends from Kentucky and California and Texas, and to see them really kind of blossom into their own. It is an amazing experience as an advisor to watch that happen. And it is truly life-changing to see them, you know, come back from their first big FFA event and to watch the passion and the determination that is really fueled by that event.
I can imagine they are also encouraged by the fact of looking at some of the careers achieved by people who have come up through FFA. For example, I think of the gentleman we had on our broadcast just a couple of weeks ago. He's the special assistant to the president these days on agriculture, trade, and nutrition policy. A guy by the name of Ray Starling from North Carolina, who something like 20 years ago was a national FFA officer. And we see folks in politics. The governor of Kansas, for example, wasn't very much involved in FFA, too. Those are good examples for them, it seems.
Oh, absolutely. And whether it's on a national scale, statewide, or just in our local community, a lot of those students see that this is what I can gain from being in an agriculture class and in the FFA and then going on to pursue agricultural fields in college. It's astounding to see, you know, the career fields that are opened up in front of them, whether it's to be an agronomist, or I have a student now who's in college who is interested in political science and becoming a lobbyist on Capitol Hill because of her involvement in agriculture and her experience with the National Public Speaking Contest. You know, it's really fueled her fire for being in agriculture.
We have been visiting here and haven't even yet talked about the Ag Day. I want to continue the conversation. I want to take a break, but when we come back, I'll talk specifically with you about the Ag Day. And I want you to think about this for a moment, because I think there's so much good that can be done by folks in the community who support FFA in one way or another. And I'm going to ask you that question. What local FFA chapters need? When we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. The Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio Chicago. Max Armstrong here with you. Orion Samuelson still recuperating from his recent surgery. I'll talk a little more about the Big O in a few minutes. His spirits are good. His voice is strong. And he'll be back here, I'm sure, before too long. On the line with us this morning is Donna Page, the FFA advisor at Rochelle Township High School out in Rochelle, Illinois. We've been talking with her about the attributes of FFA and what it does for young people, and specifically, I want to find out more about what's going on coming up in just, well, less than 2 weeks now, the Ag Day that the FFA chapter will hold there. What happens at the school? Who comes in on Ag Day, Donna? Who'll be there on the 21st for your Ag Day at the FFA chapter? And what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, Ag Day started approximately 35 to 40 years ago, Max. It was started by our former FFA advisor and ag teacher, Mr. John Hinchey, who himself grew up here in Rochelle and went through the Rochelle Township High School Agriculture Program and graduated, went to U of I, and came back to teach in his home chapter. And he started Ag Day as a way to encourage elementary school kids to learn a little bit about agriculture. Even though Rochelle is rooted in agriculture and we're a rural community, and you look out my classroom window and you can see tractors and combines running, and you know, they see the corn and they see the soybeans, they don't sometimes understand what goes on in agriculture or what kind of machinery we use or what kind of livestock is out there and available. So he started it as a way to teach elementary school students about what agriculture was. And thanks to Northern Illinois' harsh winters, we chose to stay away from FFA week and move it to the end of April whenever the weather kind of cooperates a little bit better. And so Ag Day is a day that is planned and implemented by my FFA members. We start in January with the planning, and we elect chairs and co-chairs of various committees. And the members really set about planning this day, in which approximately 1,000 pre-K, kindergarten, first, second, and third grade students from all of our feeder schools will come to the high school and learn a little bit about agriculture. All of our members who have livestock are encouraged to bring in an animal and kind of show off their project and show off what their SAE is and educate not only the little kids but also the public that's invited to come and join in on Ag Day as well. We will have people from our community here throughout the day. We will also have people who come over from various senior citizen centers to visit Ag Day and to learn a little bit about agriculture. So it's a way to teach our community and inform them about the importance of agriculture and about what our students do, which are pretty phenomenal things.
I would imagine it operates like a well-oiled clock after more than three decades of doing this at the school. You have a pretty good template, one could imagine, for doing this. And yet I would imagine these next couple of weeks, these are four-day weeks, I suspect, because of the Easter holiday, you'll be busy, won't you?
We are extremely busy. The students are busy doing the final touch-ups. For example, one of the things that we do is in a section of our greenhouse, we set up a small farm toy display, and it'll have a barn, and it'll have several different tractors and fields that they create. And just to show students, especially the elementary school students, you know, what a typical farm might look like or what you're going to use this type of machinery for. And, you know, we bring in 8th scale or 16th scale tractors and we set them all up, and so that way they can see. Well, that obviously can't be set up because my horticulture class is currently using the greenhouse. So that'll have to be set up closer to the date. We're starting to work on gathering up all of our supplies, all of our pens, making sure that all of our animals have transportation and that they can be here on time on that day. And you know, we're calling the sheep shearer and making sure that he's going to be here because we do have a live sheep shearing demonstration as well to show the students how a sheep is shorn. So it's pretty meticulous. And yes, we do have a well-oiled machine, but as you know, that sometimes those machines, even if they're well-oiled, sometimes there's a gear that goes or a bearing that goes out, and you have to fix it. But it's been a really good year this year, and the kids have done a phenomenal job with planning.
8 a.m. to 2 p.m., April 21st, Rochelle Township High School, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned...
Anyone is welcome. You could even come out if you wanted to, Max.
You know, I'd love to. Thank you for making that clear that I'm invited as well. You know, and if I'm in the area, I might. I just don't know right at the moment what my schedule is going to be on the 21st, but...
That's understandable.
My goodness, if it would work out, I'd love to be there. Let me just follow up. Yeah, and one thing, you know, you pointed out is the agriculture of the region. But there is so much agriculture around Rochelle. When you look at the ethanol plant south of town, when you look at the big greenhouse operation outside of town, the rail facility through which grain shipments move and through which, I guess, really the container shipment of grain originated through the rail yard at Rochelle. There is a lot of ag above and beyond the fields that you would find around Rochelle?
Oh, there is. And looking at my student population, I don't have a lot of them that come from traditional production backgrounds because obviously the farms in our area are larger farms. And so when I pull these students into my class, I explain that there are so many different career opportunities that are in and around our community. You know, you could go be a chemist at the ethanol plant, or you could be a grain buyer, or you could sell the DDGs and the ethanol on the Board of Trade, or you can go work in the greenhouse facilities, or you could work, you know, selling and marketing the grain for our local, you know, grain elevators. So there are a lot of agricultural opportunities for our students here at Rochelle, and I think it's a very imperative portion of my job is to let them know what is available and, you know, maybe spark their interest so that that way we can continue the rich agricultural heritage that's here in Rochelle.
Donna Page, the FFA advisor, Rochelle Township High School, Rochelle, Illinois, as we visited yesterday. She's the Ag Teacher of the Year, or was 2 years ago in 2015. And one thing that I asked Donna also as we were finishing up the visit, I said, what can we do to help you? What can folks who feel strongly about FFA do? And of course, there are opportunities to make contributions. I mean, there is a foundation, an FFA foundation in Illinois. There is a national FFA foundation, and scholarships are made available from the monies contributed there. But she said just the donation of time can mean a lot. If you're a businessman or woman in the community and there is some kind of knowledge you could impart to these FFA students, by all means, contact the advisor in your community and just see if there's a way that you can lend a hand to helping develop this next generation of leaders that will be coming along with the help of the FFA organization. In the grain market, as we wound up the week yesterday, May corn was down 1 1/4, down to 359.5. December corn lost 1.5. Down to 384.5. Soybeans, pretty benign close yesterday after some recent negative action. May beans went up 0.5 cent a bushel at 942. November beans down 1 1/4 at 949.5. We'll talk markets on the other side of the news. Thank you, sir. Hope you have a great weekend. Get out there and frolic in the warmth.
Ooh, I will frolic.
It's a good word, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you can. You can take that a lot of ways. Frolic, or let's go frolic.
I think I'll frolic through the tulips, or tiptoe through the tulips.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, the intonation can make a big difference there.
It can.
Take care, sir.
You too, buddy. Bye.
Bye. Saturday morning show from WGN Radio, 25 minutes before 6. Max Armstrong here with you. And the Big O is continuing to spring back from some recent leg surgery and... Oh, he'll be back in action real soon. You can't keep down a good, strong, strapping Norwegian boy like the Big O. We still don't have an agriculture secretary. Still don't. A rush to Reagan National Airport yesterday so Congress could hurry home for their Easter break. And, yes, they did leave some things undone, including the approval of the Secretary of Agriculture. So Sonny Perdue, the former governor of Georgia, still waits to become the 31st person to hold that job at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, the earliest that the vote on his appointment could come would be the 24th, I think. I'm looking over at the calendar. Yeah, that would be Monday the 24th. That Monday, they'll be back in Washington, and it looks like that's the day that they'll vote on the Secretary of Agriculture, more than 3 months after Donald Trump took office. Now, some of the delay could be blamed on the Trump administration, I suppose. The rest is the fault of Congress. And will Sonny Perdue get to settle in at his desk in that much-talked-about first 100 days? Well, we'll see. Maybe. It's going to be close, though. We talk about markets here Saturday mornings, and Dale Durkos with AgriVisor is one of our trusted sage veteran analysts who comes by from time to time. And I asked him about those recent reports. It was a week ago yesterday. We got the grain stocks report, and we got the planting intentions report. So I said to Dale, what reports are yet coming up now?
Well, people are going to look at the new supply-demand numbers that we get here just in about a week now because they'll have some new numbers for South America within them. But realistically, the first big report comes, I think it's the 9th day of May. That's our first official winter wheat production estimate. And I think that one could be huge.
Huge from the standpoint that it will show us a significant number, an increase. What are you thinking? I mean, we've been getting rain in those Plain States areas that have been quite dry.
You know, the interesting thing about that particular report itself, because it is the first surveyed production estimate, yield-wise, yeah, we're getting rain, so, you know, the prospect should be a little bit better, but it was kind of interesting. We didn't see much change on the weekly condition ratings. I think, though, the interesting twist on that report is looking at Kansas and Oklahoma, maybe even Texas, and start to look at the percentage of crop that's going to be harvested to try to get an idea how much of this wheat ends up getting grazed out because of what happened with the wildfires.
You think there's been a significant amount of grazing already?
I think there's been a fair amount simply because wheat prices have been relatively cheap. But, you know, now that the wildfires have gone through out there, and wheat virtually gets untouched by a wildfire because it's a green plant. It doesn't have all that tinder to really fuel the flame. In fact, that's where cattle and people go to escape wildfires, is into the middle of a wheat field. So, you know, you kind of wonder with the loss in forages they have out there, how many people are going to turn cattle out on wheat pasture and just let them graze it out.
There's plenty of wheat in the world, though. Let us not forget, right?
Oh, there is. And there's even plenty of wheat here in the U.S. You know, the USDA, the first shot that they had, you know, they were talking about taking our carryout from 1.1 billion down to somewhere around 900 million bushels. So we're nowhere near going to be short, even with a significantly smaller crop this year.
Well, as far as the soybean market is concerned, that report of a week ago was pretty tough on beans, wasn't it?
You know, it was, but, you know, I kind of chuckle when I think about that report and actually the whole planting intentions report. The trade got snookered by the February weather. Really did. Everybody looked at the February weather and farmers doing field work in February, and everybody got the idea, wow, we're going to get into the field and we're going to plant early, and that might mean more corn acres than what we had been thinking. No, that wasn't the case. It wasn't going to be the case, you know, and people really got hung up because of that. Yeah, it is more acres than we thought. We are down, but we also have to remember we're really in the midst right now putting in a South American harvest low here, too.
South America, well, let's talk about it for just a moment. Rain in the forecast, some significant rain for Argentina, and oh my goodness, we can't help but think, what happened a year ago? Are we going to see a repeat of that?
You know, it's not only a year ago, it's 6 months ago. They were having some flood issues in the midst of planting as well. You know, and there is some real risk of that down there. You know, I've read in some places, you know, it's going to be 10, 15 days before a number of people get out and really go back at harvest again in Argentina. You know, what happens if we get more heavy rains? You know, it keeps putting it off, and they're worried that they get another round of heavy rains, which would potentially bring back flooding. I don't know whether it will or not. But I think that's going to be something that's going to weigh heavily on the market's mind anyway over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
They'll really watch the weather. Traders will this weekend to see just how much those rain amounts turn out to be in Argentina.
Oh, no doubt about that. You know, because South America has become such a huge ingredient in the markets in the spring now, because it is a big harvest. You know, in beans, we're harvesting a crop that's going to be in excess of 6 billion bushel in South America. So when you stop and think about that, it's bigger than our crop. That really kind of drives home the point. What happens with weather down there really has a driving force on our market. So with harvest problems, potential coming up in Argentina, and then we can look to northern Brazil, where we plant the bulk of the second crop corn. Weather's been good. Yields look good. Does that rain continue? And what are the dynamics for the corn market because of that?
They are not even yet to pollination on that safrinha corn crop, are they?
No, we're really still a ways. We're, I'd say, probably about mid-June in terms of what we would think of up here in the Midwest, you know, where we're at. So we got about 3 to 4 more weeks to go before we really get into the key pollination period.
Let's talk about China for just a moment. Foreign leaders are coming to call on our President Trump, and China happens to be a big trading partner of ours. How nervous should the trade be going forward here?
You ought to be nervous, but I think there's a lot more angst about what's going to happen out there than probably what the end result will be. You know, I tend to be a little bit more optimistic that, you know, things are not going to get out of hand or out of control. You know, we've got some issues, just like we have issues with Mexico and maybe even Canada and the rest of the world. But I don't think the issues are that insurmountable. And I don't think Trump's really all that unreasonable when it comes down to really putting a business deal together.
So would you say that's kind of the position that you have relative to all of this trade, the concern about trade and the saber rattling that took place during the campaign? In the end of the day, the reality is we'll still be doing business.
Yeah, the reality is we'll still be doing business. I think agriculture will still come out of it feeling pretty good about things. Yeah, we may get dented and dinged up a little bit in there if they try to redo some of these packages, but you know, as I pointed out to people about NAFTA, everybody got all excited about NAFTA, and I went, do you realize how old NAFTA is? You know, that goes back to the 92 presidential campaign. It was a done deal by then. Clinton actually signed it. We've had a lot of changes in all three economies over this 25, 30-year period. We really need to go revisit NAFTA and say, do we need to make some adjustments in this? And I think that's going to be the normal case.
Farmers, I would imagine, after those reports of a week ago, closed the soybean bin doors, didn't they?
Oh, I think so. You know, but farmers don't own a lot of beans. When you step back and you look at, and I don't remember the exact percentages, but when you look at the percentage of on-farm inventories on that March stocks report, they are on beans a fair amount lower than they were a year ago at this point, which really says farmers have been good sellers of beans all winter long. So, yeah, they still own some beans, but by and large, they've done a great job of pushing beans into the pipeline. It's corn that they really hold a lot of, and we really need to be concerned about, especially in the Western Corn Belt.
So many years we've had a spring rally of some sort, and it may have been brought about by something happening outside of the United States or something right here regarding our planting season or other developments. We have quite a few days left in this spring. What do you think about the possibility of a price spike, at least, for corn or soybeans?
How much of a spike, I really don't know about. I think both of them we're going to see higher levels from where we are today. I've got some timing indicators that I use going back and counting price cycles that beans in particular are in a window right now to put in a good low. Corn, it looks like we're in that same mode at this particular point, although maybe not quite as important of a low. But I think we're really positioned to turn up. And as we're sitting here today talking, it's raining outdoors, you know, and the thought of early planting has gone by the wayside. And that brings a lot of indecision, uncertainty, and with that, we'll probably see the corn market have some response to that.
Dale Durkles with the AgriVisor Service. He's based in Bloomington, Illinois. Well, farmers are anxious to get into the fields. Once you get into April, especially downstate Illinois, they want to be planting. And northern Illinois farmers want to be getting in fairly soon, too. I'll talk about that next with a farm broadcaster friend here on the Saturday morning show, this portion of which is brought to you by Wink Products Company. Well, it's time to be planting, many farmers would say. And as soon as it dries up and as soon as it warms up, they'll be out there. I talked about it with Dave Gentry, farm broadcaster friend down in central Illinois. He's at Champaign at WDWS Radio. What's the status, Dave?
We're trying to get a little dust to kick up here. We had a lot of rain this week, and we had some cool weather. We had better weather in February than we had in March, and everybody's pretty antsy to get started now.
You know, it's kind of interesting. We did have that amazing weather in February, and there was so much activity in the fields. I was talking earlier this week with a market analyst who said he was doing a lot of farmer meetings at that time, and for the first time ever, he had a farmer meeting canceled in February. Not because of inclement wintry weather, but because farmers were busy in the field and they wouldn't be coming in for the meeting.
That's exactly what was going on. It was just getting wild before things finally calmed down a little bit in March because we got some rain and some cold weather for a while.
So the magic combination here now would be sunshine, warmer temperatures, a breeze, and then how many days would it be before farmers could get in, you think?
Boy, I don't know. I would say we've still got to have to sit on it a week. But, Max, when I say that, they beat me by 2 or 3 days. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here.
Some are ready to go, to be sure. And I would imagine the soil temps are still fairly cool, given the cold weather we've had here of late, aren't they?
Yeah, they're still not where they ought to be. But folks are really getting antsy and wanting to get out there. The sun's shining now. Things are looking good. We're back ready to hit it.
Early planting generally serves them well, does it not, in terms of yield, getting a crop off to a good early start?
Yeah, that's what they say, and the University of Illinois kind of puts out some bulletins on it. In fact, they put out a special one this year and said, hey, let's not get too carried away here because the end of February is awfully early.
I want to shift gears for just a moment. You know, the city of Chicago gets slammed for having people on the voter rolls who shouldn't be there, and you've heard the expression over the years. You know, there are people voting in Chicago who've been dead for 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years. But now let the record show, in central Illinois this week, you had a dead man win an election.
We did, and I'll tell you what, Joe Rittenhouse was a long-serving township road commissioner over in Bemidji, Illinois, and he was at one time the youngest road commissioner elected in Illinois, I believe. He'd served since 1962. And Joe passed away on Sunday, and he won the election Tuesday night.
It was too late to take his name off the ballot, I guess, huh?
That's exactly what was going on. They're going to have to appoint someone now. But I worked with Joe for a number of years out in the townships, and he was well-respected.
What a fitting tribute to him, really, to pay tribute to all this career and all of these years of service in the county to still be elected after passing.
Yeah. If it would happen to anyone, it would be to Joe. Everyone kind of got a kick out of that. It made the situation a little lighter for us.
Talk a little bit about that township road commissioner or road trustee in the central Illinois counties. What does he or she do? Well, what makes them especially effective? How do they interact, for example, with the farmers who live there?
You've got to keep your roads in decent shape for farmers to be able to get around, and that includes having good bridges. That's been a big part of it. Illinois had a big bridge program going for a number of years because as the equipment max got bigger and heavier, you had to have better bridges in these rural areas for people to be able to get around.
And the thing I've noticed, even the gravel roads in central Illinois, and of course everything's laid out in squares, but even the gravel roads are so well maintained. There are no potholes. They're built right. There's a berm in the middle. There are ditches down the side so they can be effectively drained. And you can tool down even the gravel roads in most instances without any problem.
And it's taken a number of years to get them to this point. You know, we went through it for a number of years with dirt roads, and then we went to oil on the dirt, and then finally got to an oil and chip combination, oil and rock, and that works well. And with your motor fuel tax money, they come out and redo these periodically. It used to be yearly with some of the better materials they have now. You don't have to do them quite that often, but it's a pretty busy job. And then, of course, in the winter, the road commissioner has to keep the roads clear when we have snowfall, and that in the country is a pretty big job.
Farmers, in many instances, will be doing that, handling that role, and assisting, will they not, with their equipment?
A lot of times you'll see the guys who work part-time for the townships are farmers.
If you want to get the job done, you bring in farmers. And I heard a couple of instances recently where that takes place. I am told at Indianapolis International Airport, when the snow falls, the guys who clear the runways are farmers, are local farmers who are under contract, I guess, to bring in their tractors and get the job done. Somebody was telling me that, and I was relating that story to the chairman of the National Corn Growers Association, who lives out in Maryland, Chip Bowling, and he said, yeah, you know what? We even get called sometimes. I said, what do you mean? He said, a few years ago, there was a big snowstorm in the Washington, D.C. area, and he said they brought in some farmers to help clear the bridges. He said, we got the call to come help. So when the chips are down, you can count on farmers, can't you, Dave?
It does happen. A friend of my dad's used to go in and plow the streets in Sadorus, Illinois for a number of years, and he farmed out a couple of miles north of town, but that's just the way it's done around here.
You're going to send folks scrambling to the map, to MapQuest, to see where Sadorus is now. I've been through there a few times. I know where it is.
It's a pretty big city. If you blink, you can still see part of the town.
Well, you and I will have fun working together this summer on the big half century of progress coming up at the end of August. But we want to mention that just so folks get it on their calendars. I do believe it's August 24th through the 27th. We'll kick it off on that Thursday with a tractor ride, and then we'll just jam pack those 4 days with a lot of action with old tractors and old equipment, with people coming into the old air base there at Rantoul from all over the United States.
I'm always excited for that show, and the best part about it is you actually see that old equipment out there working for a living. That's the fun part about it.
Dave Gentry on the radio at WDWS at Champaign. Talked with the farm broadcaster in Ohio this week, Ty Higgins, at the Ohio AgNet. How soon will they be planting in that eastern part of the Corn Belt, Ty?
As soon as possible. I say that with tongue-in-cheek, but that's kind of how these guys think, especially if you're in the southern part of the state. As with every state, we have such a wide range of soils across Ohio. The guys in the south-central part of the state, they have gravelly ground, and the moisture really doesn't hold on for too long. And so when the ground feels right to them and fit to go, they go as early as possible. And, you know, usually this time of year, I've been in a couple of cabs planting corn, but here we are, you know, the first full week of April, and I have not been in a cab yet planting corn. Haven't seen any real activity in the field, except for, of course, some anhydrous applications over the last couple of weeks. Spring tillage, burn down, top dressing wheat, and so on. But as far as the planters rolling yet, nothing real significant across Ohio.
Your producers have been busy, though, I've noticed. And one thing that caught my attention was those truckloads of hay headed to Kansas. I gather that some of your folks really embraced the challenge and welcomed the opportunity to help their fellow farmers.
They really did. I mean, caravan after caravan, as you said, of these semi-truckloads full of round bales and supplies heading out. Most of the Ohio groups went to Ashland, Kansas, which is right along the Oklahoma border, and boy, that county got hit really hard, Max, with, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres burned and tens of thousands of livestock destroyed in those wildfires. And these Ohio farmers, and really it was young farmers from the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, the Young Ag Professionals Group, they really got together and spearheaded the effort. And fortunately, one of my coworkers, Matt Reese with Ohio's Country Journal, was one of the ones that went out there to help. And yes, he went out to cover it as a story and to kind of relay back here at Ohio what's going on and how bad things were and how things were improving with the help that was coming from all corners of the U.S. But he went first and foremost to be there to help.
You know, what occurs to me is that's a pretty good haul out there. I'm guessing well in excess of 800. Maybe 900 miles. Who handled the transportation? Was it the individual farmers, or did they contract with somebody to do the hauling?
The individual farmers, believe it or not, Max. And that was one of the things that was being asked to be donated was transportation. You know, a lot of farmers have round bales stored up, but they don't have any way of getting what they have there on the farm. They might have loaded with the skid steer and put in the back of the barn onto a trailer and hauled off somewhere. So you think about when someone asks for donations for Kansas, yeah, hay supplies are great, and they have a lot of round bales out in Ashland, Kansas right now in fields from one way to another. They also have fencing supplies coming in, but a lot of these donations would be in the form of cash to help out, because not only the miles and the time and the energy spent and the trucks you're hauling, but think of all the fuel costs that go into getting all those bales from point A to point B in those.
Ty Higgins, yeah, there at the Ohio AgNet, talking about helping out the farmers, the ranchers, so devastated by the wildfires out in Kansas. Well, we'll talk to Mike Steve momentarily here.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.